I'm just kidding. Alan's not here. He's on assignment in Europe, doing the good work, spreading the good word of the podcast to those Norwegians. Yeah, so we are back, or I am back again, for another episode of the podcast. We should be having two this week. This is podcast B for Brendan. Alan will be releasing his own version of the podcast.
Letter A.
Yeah, letter podcast A.
Nice.
That voice you just heard is my guest this evening, friend of the show and co-host of the Nerds on Film podcast, Dave McGuire.
Wow, that was a horrible hello. I'll do that again. Hello, Not a Thing podcast listeners.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Glad to have you here to help out.
Absolutely. Today's topic was 100% worthy of wanting to do this. Absolutely.
Yeah, we're switching things up a little this week. I know normally Alan have our wonderful conversations about science and technology and entertainment news or things we've seen. So we're kind of working off that angle since it's not here. I felt like to try and do something different so we can maintain the purity of essence of our show when he is back on it. So we decided to watch a film and discuss. I don't know. There weren't many other decisions to make.
No.
But we went with...
We thought about it.
Yeah.
We're like, this is going to work, just in case we can't think of anything else.
But yeah, so when I was thinking about what movie I'd want to watch or show David, I decided to pick one of my favorites. One that I've seen many, many times. We went with 1997's L.A. Confidential. So if you have not seen L.A. Confidential...
Walk away.
Don't stop listening. You're not going to want to hear the rest of this episode. But I do highly recommend seeing this movie. It's one of the best movies I've ever seen.
Yeah.
I think it's one that most people would enjoy. So yeah, check that out and then come back to listen to this podcast.
There are massive spoilers.
Yeah, it's going to be full of spoilers, and also you won't have... You don't have no frame of reference. You don't know who Rollo Tomasi is. If you don't know who Rollo Tomasi is, just stop listening right now.
That's like saying, do you know who Kaiser Sose is? If you don't know, walk away.
Yeah, walk away. Interesting you say that,
though. I know, right?
Another Kevin Spacey movie.
An unintentional segue.
So yeah, L.A. Confidential... came out in 1997, directed by Curtis Hanson, written by Curtis Hanson and Brian Helgeland, starring Guy Pearce.
Unknown at that time.
At that time, unknown Guy Pearce. At that time, mildly known Russell Crowe. Before he became super famous. Kevin Spacey.
Danny DeVito.
Yeah, Danny DeVito.
Kim Basinger,
who won Best Supporting Actress that year. And, of course, James Cromwell of Babe and Star Trek First Contact fame.
Yep. They're like looking at the script and like, okay, that guy from Star Trek and the Babe, that's...
Oh, yeah, and David Strathairn.
Which one was he?
Pierce Patchett.
Oh, right. So I never
knew that
guy's name.
Good Night and Good Luck. Yes, and many other things.
And his mustache should have gotten credit, too.
Yeah.
That mustache was brilliant.
Yeah.
Absolutely wonderful.
I can't grow a mustache that good.
Neither can I. That's why I make fun of it, because I'm jealous. It was just so thick, and it had like nice color to it and fullness. Bastard.
So I've seen this movie at least a dozen times. I actually wrote a paper on it for a college music film class.
Nice.
So I'm a bit of a fan. And previous to tonight, you had not seen it in its entirety.
I had attempted once, and I chose the wrong time to watch it because it's not one of those movies that you can just put on in the background. It is methodical in the sense that you have to watch it. Every scene, there are, you know, every line of dialogue. Like, I even contemplated putting on the subtitles just to make sure that, like, I didn't... Because I did that, you know, I do that. I've been finding myself I do that, especially with shows like The Wire and Deadwood.
Getting hard of hearing in your old age?
Yeah. Well, it's because those shows, because they have a specific dialogue and a rhythm to it, I want to make sure that I'm seeing all because of the nuances. And I feel like the dialogue, especially in this movie, is 100%... needed to be absorbed for you to be able to track the clues as you go along with, you know, with White and Exley. Yes.
Yeah, well, it is one of those 1950s, 1940s style hard-boiled kind of detective stories.
Yeah.
Where there's a lot of plot going on.
Oh, yeah.
It's not a movie to watch in passing.
No, it's not. And so so I literally had not been able to, like, I started it, and then it did not, I wasn't able to finish it because I caught maybe, like, glimpses here and there.
So it's not the movie to start at, like, 12:30 at night.
No, which I had done because, you know, Brendan was like, you should watch this movie, and so we started to, but we both were working at an undisclosed location where it required us to work late hours. And so by the time we had finished our job, it was, you know, 11 o'clock at night. And then the drive to his place was another, like, 10, 20 on top of that. So by the time we get there, it's like, all right, guys, it's 12:30. Now let's
start that two-hour movie.
That requires you to think. Yeah. And so it's just like, all right. So actually, the copy we watched was a copy he lent me, I don't know.
That's got to be two or three years ago. And he's never watched
it. And I haven't watched it. So when he was like, hey, you want to watch them? I was like, yes, finally, now I can sit down and actually watch it. And it was, as a first-time watcher, you know, it's an awesome, awesome movie. Because the opening bit, when you first see Russell Crowe, like, what a great way to, like, establish his character.
Yeah.
It's just sort of like, I'm going to be right back. I'm going to go take care of this guy who's beating up his wife.
Yeah, you know right off the bat that he's a badass who can handle himself. And he also cares.
He cares. Because he's got his own sorted past. Of his own, you know, problems with people who are alcoholics and drunks and so on and so forth.
Well, yeah, if you were chained to a radiator and saw your mother beaten to death, probably not too kindly to white people.
Yeah, just a little bit. And then, God, you know, I've never hated Guy Pearce before in a movie, and my, like, only because of the last 10 minutes that I actually, it was like, you're a good guy. Every other motive, I was like, I want to just...
Well, he's not necessarily a bad guy.
He's not, but
he is definitely self-serving, and he is definitely kind of a prick.
Oh, totally.
But it's not like there are some evil characters.
He's not an evil character
movie.
By no means. I don't want to paint that picture, but... He definitely does some...
He plays by the book.
He plays by the book, but some of the lines they wrote for him are just so, like, backhanded, and it's just...
Like when Bud White's partner gets fired, and then gets murdered.
Yeah.
And then it's a good way to get out of a jail sentence.
Yeah. It's just... I think they should just call him, like, worst place, worst time commander-in-chief. Like, I mean, he's seriously... Like, puts himself in this situation. He's like, I'm going to be clever.
I'm gonna poke the bear. I'm just going to poke the bear. Yeah, it's going to be fun.
No, this is going to be fun.
I'm in charge of anything.
Right. Oh, but it was... I'll tell you, the last, like, 5 minutes when Cromwell is walking away. Because, okay, so the whole thing, for those of you that want to recap with us, right? Guy Pearce's character actually wants to be a detective. Like, he's that is his goal, that's his arc, that's his purpose.
That was what his father did.
Mm-hmm. So he wants to emulate his dad, and he keeps going to James Cromwell, who's the captain or the chief of police, and he's like, make me detective. And Cromwell keeps telling him, like, if you can't, you know, beat up a suspect outside of the law...
Plant evidence
if you know they're guilty, shoot them in the back if they're walking away... I mean, and that one really stuck out to me. I was like, that's a very specific choice.
I wonder if that's going to come back to bite him in the ass.
Yeah, right? That's one of those things like, yeah, if you can't punch him in the face while he's eating eggs and bacon on a Sunday morning at 7:15, then you can't be a detective. And then Sunday morning rolls around and you're like, is it going
to
happen?
Oh, he did not choose to bake bacon today. Come on.
Of all days, go with the Eagles muffin. Just walk away from the bacon.
Have some nice melon.
But, I mean, that part where, like, I was watching it and I was like, he's got to shoot him in the back. Like, that would be such poetic justice. Like, finally just do it. And then they just tease you for a good, like, 3 minutes.
Well, I think he was going to let him go, but it wasn't until he said, you know, show him your badge so they know you're a policeman. Mm. I think he really took the whole being a policeman and the honor of it
seriously. And he didn't want Cromwell to have that
And he
honor.
Didn't want, yeah, exactly.
Okay. That makes
Although,
much more sense.
In the end, really, he let him have the hero's death, so he wasn't implicated. But at least he was dead.
Yeah. But
his name got the victory, but his life did not.
He did not at all. And I think that's what also was really cool about that character, is that he's so... The scene where he is interrogating the three the three suspected murderers of the Night Owl.
Mm-hmm.
For me, stands out as being, like, if you ever saw Fallen,
yeah,
the scene where Denzel Washington walks outside and the ghost or, like, the demon is, like, walking around him,
jumping from person to person. Yeah.
Right, so that scene where he's just like, I don't know what's going on, that's kind of how I felt watching this scene, because it was just like, he goes to one person and toys with him by, like, allowing the other guys in the waiting room or in the other, like, holding cells to hear some parts of the conversation. And it's just like, okay. And then you just see him, like, quickly, like, jump around as he's trying to, like, piece things together. I mean, that is probably one of the most well-orchestrated, you know, conversations or pieces of cinema that I've ever seen, because it is so methodical, and that's exactly who Exley is. I mean, mm-hmm. he's a methodical SOB.
Well, you know, even the characters that don't like him as a person, they understand he is smart.
Yeah. I almost wanted to have, like, some sort of, like, riff track where... Where it's like, after, like, he gets everybody to confess, like, they all look at him, he's like, he's a prick, but man, is he good. I mean, look at him. Because, I mean, because everyone's like, we hate this guy. And then as, like, they're conducting, right, they're like, let's just keep our comments to ourselves, guys.
Yeah.
Let's be quiet.
No, and I also like Bud White's reaction in that scene as well. Where when they start confessing not to the murders that they were accused of, but to another crime.
Right.
Once again, involving a woman.
Right.
And that, you know, I've never seen someone break a chair with their bare hands just by gripping it, but maybe they didn't make chairs as good in the 50s.
They just used toothpicks. Just really finely glued together.
Once the balsa industry kind of collapsed. Maybe we shouldn't make chairs out of balsa wood anymore.
Want to just go back to model airplanes? Yeah, that's fine. Yeah, I mean... I gotta say, like, and I'm really surprised because we did some research prior to recording, and both Crow and Pierce both got snubbed.
Yeah,
not even a nomination.
They didn't get nominations,
and that's a crying shame because I mean everybody else around them was getting recognition, which rightfully so.
Mm-hmm.
I mean that movie to begin with because of the year that they were in.
So it came out in 1997,
mm-hmm.
and it was nominated for 9 Oscars.
Yep,
it won 2. I believe it would have won 9 if it hadn't been the same year that a movie, little film called Titanic came out.
Yeah.
And really, not even a year. Titanic came out mid-December. If it had come out 2 weeks later, it would have been the next award season.
Mm-hmm.
And LA Confidential would have gotten all the fame.
Yeah.
But I feel like it's kind of flown under the radar. It's not appreciated as much as, you know. I mean, you're a person who watches a lot of movies.
I love
you
movies.
You know movies.
Mm-hmm.
You have a podcast about movies.
We do, yeah.
And you had not seen this movie.
Yeah, yeah. And I think, because I remember it being a big deal when it first came out, but I don't remember if it was, I don't think it's really stood the test of time because a lot of people don't talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's one of those cult movies where if you were only a few select people, you know, if you say, you know, LA Confidential, they'll look at you, and just like we said at the beginning, you know, like, if you say Kaiser Sosa, you instantly know that going. If you say Tabula, what is that? For LA, what was the Rollo Tomasi? If you say that, like really deep-seated film cinephiles, they're going to look at you and be like, sup, bro? How you doing? I imagine it's like the way you get into, like, really deep, like, dark city movies, like Password, you're like, Rollo Tomasi.
That was speakeasy for movies. Although it does sound kind of hipstery.
Yeah,
like, yeah, you didn't watch that movie. You're not.
What, did you just see it on a newspaper or something? That was an awesome scene. Because the way that was crafted too, like, I know I keep jumping around, but that was awesome to see.
Which scene?
So Kevin Spacey just got shot.
Oh, okay.
And you just realized that James Cromwell is, you know, he's a bad guy.
The puppet master.
You haven't figured out quite yet exactly. I mean, you are now getting inklings that he's the puppet master, but it's not really there. At least it wasn't for me until, like, the next big scene that he...
Well, even up until the point that he pulls the trigger, you don't know.
You have no idea.
You just think, oh, going to meet the boss to go to discuss what's going
talk
on.
Talk about it.
Work with these guys, and then boom, shot in the
chest. Yeah, but when Kevin spits at him, because I didn't catch what Cromwell says to him. I think he says
like, do you have a valediction, boyo?
Oh, yeah, and then he goes, like, Rollo Tomasi.
This is Rollo Tomasi, and starts laughing, and then dies.
And then dies, and he kind of goes, ah, and then the next scene, they're, you know, they're having a police briefing, and Cromwell goes, like, hey, actually, come over here. Let's talk about something. He's like, does the name Rollo Tomasi mean anything to you? And it's just like that instant click, and like all of a sudden, Guy Pearce is completely onto everything. Like he's figured it out. And that I just thought was like such a great way for their like.
It was a well played scene.
Too. It was a well. I mean, yeah,
he really controlled himself, but you could just see the seething under the skin.
And you could just see you could see the connecting like, the dots too. He's like, wait, I've only told this story to one person. This name does not exist in entire human history. And that one person now died. I wonder how, James Cromwell figured it out. It just, there's so much good out of this movie, and I really want a lot of people to go watch it, because it's just...
I mean, at this point, if they're listening to this,
we've told you everything.
You've already watched the movie.
Right.
This is more, I urge you to watch it again. Afterwards.
Let's put it this way. We finished within 5 minutes of having finished the movie. I have it on Amazon, and it's on its way in a Blu-ray form. Like, that's how I was like, it needs to be in my collection. That's one of those movies, like, you said this is your movie that you watch over and over again.
This is definitely one of them. I mean, I maybe haven't seen it as many times as I've seen, like, The Hunt for Red October.
Okay.
Because that's one that you can just, I can just put on repeat and just keep watching it.
See, mine's Heat.
Yeah, that's good.
So it's like, this definitely is in that category. Like you said, like, I could watch that movie over and over again. And that's where I got the question that I wanted to ask you was... So now that you have seen this so many times before, when you go back and watch it from the beginning, do you see the Easter eggs that lead up to the ultimate picture? Or is it just...
There are hints throughout, and I do pick up on those. I mean, at this point, there's not a lot I haven't picked up on, just because I've seen it so many times.
Right.
If I was still picking up on things, I'm not really watching it. But, yeah, no, there's... It's... A lot of it is... kind of background dialogue things, mm-hmm. just throwaway comments by really extra. I mean, they're not nothing really said characters gives it away, but it's just little things. And even then, it only gives you kind of a picture, the beginnings of the picture.
Mm-hmm.
It's not until that third act begins that you really
start to piece the puzzle. Yeah.
Yeah. It's that Jack Vincennes' death really.
Yeah.
Pulls all those dots together.
Which is so... Oh, God, I love Kevin Spacey, man. Like, that...
Well, I'd read that he, to prepare for the role, he'd studied Dean Martin. And so he was modeling himself after Dean Martin.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, you can see it in the clothes and just
the jacket and the Dragnet, like, rip-off TV show that they have on the TV.
Badge of Honor.
Badge of Honor.
Just the facts.
Yeah, it's, he's really good. Like... And I think at that point, he was mildly on his rocket. Like, this was another movie that helped propel that rocket.
Well, I think he was already on his way. Because, I mean, I think it was the year before he'd done Seven. And maybe a year or two before that, he did Usual Suspects.
Seven, I think.
95?
Yeah.
Okay, so a couple... Within the last 5 years, leading up to this movie, I mean, he did Seven, Usual Suspects, Glengarry Glen Ross.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he's kind of established.
Yeah.
And that's why, of the characters in the movie... who had the bigger parts of those main three of Exley, White, and Vincennes, you wouldn't expect him to be the one to die, because he's the name.
No.
They deep blue seed it before deep blue seeing it was a thing.
Can't believe you just made that reference. For those of you that have not seen Deep Blue Sea, I urge you to watch that movie just
stop listening to my podcast. No, I'm kidding.
I mean, go watch it after. It's not worth turning off the podcast to watch.
No.
But it is completely worth your time, because it is the most craptastic shark movie you're ever going to see next to probably like Piranha or Piranha 3D.
Not shark movies.
Well, okay. Fishes who kill people.
Yeah, okay,
because, Samuel Jackson is billed in that movie as being one of the main... stars, right? I mean, it's Sam Jackson. If he's in a movie, like, you know it.
Yeah.
And so they establish him as being a very prominent character.
Yeah.
Right?
He gives this amazing speech
about how they're going to survive.
Tells a story about how his whole team died on the mountain and they survived, and we're going to survive this.
I still have it on my head. He's like, so we're not going to argue anymore. We're going to get together. And right as he's about to finish his sentence, Shark comes up and just eats him and pulls him in.
Okay, when you give an inspiring speech, don't stand next to the moon pool.
Don't give the sharks an opportunity.
Yeah.
Especially since they have, like, brain power of, like, apes.
Yeah.
Right?
Supercharged brain sharks.
The sharks can't hear us, guys. It's fine. They're stupid. Even though they swim backwards.
Okay, now I feel bad, though, that I've even... remotely connected Deep Blue Sea and
no, it's okay.
They're completely
different films.
But the point I was trying to make is that it was a very shocking death. It was not something you saw coming.
No.
I mean, James Cromwell is making tea 1 second and then turns around and shoots a guy in the chest.
Yeah. Well, see, here's what I my first thought when that scene started happening was, okay, I didn't feel comfortable. I thought, because I was telling Brendan this before we got that one of the things that is that you really feel about certain movies. If you watch a lot of movies like you and I do and anyone listening, you know, the one thing you have to learn when you start seeing movies where there's a lot of different storylines that are happening at once is that at some point there's going to be a through line that connects all of them together, right? So like with L.A. Confidential, right, you had it starts off with this crime boss, Mickey Cohen going to jail for evading taxes. Like that's Which creates a vacuum. And then all of a sudden it's like then people started like... people in his army are starting to get whacked. And so, like, you have that plot line. And then that kind of, like, fizzles out and kind of goes away and you don't hear about it for a little bit. And then you see, like, this murder happen and, like, so all these different things. So, like, as cinephiles, you're like, oh, wait, hold on. This is going to have some, like, continuity, some through line. So that being said, all you're looking for now is the puzzle piece that's going to connect it all together.
Well, that's one of those classic noir tropes where it's, you know, there's two different cases, but really they're the same case.
And I'm like bad like cop shows are still following that formula, right? Like I think there was one cop show, Awake, with Jason Isaacs.
Yeah.
Where like in one world he'd have a crime that he had to solve, and the other one had, but they had like some way interconnected, and like each one would help each other solve the case. It's a tale as old as time. I mean, like Bogey was doing this before, you know, Spacey got to it. But when he goes in and he sits down with Cromwell, like, I was feeling very uncomfortable. I'm like, there's a very quiet scene. They're talking to each other. And I'm scared because, like, for a second there, I thought, like, maybe Spacey's in on it. Like, maybe it was Spacey.
Well, yeah, you were saying that earlier.
Maybe it's Spacey, because all of a sudden they're like, oh, yeah, the three guys we had in jail, yeah, they're gone now. And it's just like, what? And it's like, the only person that was there was Spacey. And I was thinking, like, oh, that'd be a nice, like, little twist. Is he a good bad guy? I think he'd be a decent bad guy. I mean, if you cut off
Gwyneth Paltrow's head.
What's in the box? So yeah, I was unsettled, and then when he got shot, like my hands went up to my head, and I was like, "What? No!" And then that's when things started to kind of fall together. But I mean, that is the quintessential look of what, for me, what is a good script is that it get you hooked on the characters, number one, mm-hmm. which is what that script absolutely does.
Well, that's why it won Best Adapted Screenplay.
Right? I mean, it gets you good, grounded, solid characters with believability and, you know, where you want to root for them, mm-hmm. you know? And even though Bud's kind of a hothead, like we said, you know, he still cares. And so that's why you're like, yeah, just go beat somebody up, but just make sure you save the girl in the process. Like, I don't give a... like, beat the shit out of some guy.
Yeah.
But because you have that, like, that groundedness, everything else that's happening... And that's the thing, is that I could really equate this to, like, The Wire. You know, it was real police work that was happening. Whereas if you watch things like CSI or any other, like, cop procedural show, you know, within 30 minutes, they've done, you know, like, weeks worth of policing. And this movie, definitely, is just...
Kind of pre-forensics, too.
Right, pre-forensics.
Well, I mean, there was at least training, because I did think that was a nice touch when Exley goes into the Night Owl, the first officer on the scene with the murders, and he handkerchief to open the door.
Yeah.
Which, at that point, was kind of like, oh, once he gets to the bathroom and sees all the bodies.
that was shocking, too. That was a great reveal.
Yeah.
I was like,
no score. Like, their score leading up to it,
mm-hmm.
building the tension, and then right as the door opens, you hear the creak of the door. And
that's it.
Yeah.
Which is another great thing. It's like, the sound direction is amazing, because you're literally, they knew when to pull the sound and just rely on the ambient noise, and then when to provide tension, you know? And so, but when they decided not to put sound in, and that's always my favorite, because when they put in this heightened... you know, three-stringed instrument or something to help be like, oh, I'm building the tension. It's like, no, less is more. Like,
that's how they do it in a, you know, hour-long procedural on TV. Right. We must blast the music all the time to create tension because we can't write it.
Because, I mean, the fact that tense when he's going in to see the boss, if he's going to shoot James Cromwell or not. I was sitting there, my guts kind of started clenching a bit. I was like, is he going to do it? Is he not going to do it? is he going to become a bad cop? Like, I actually thought for a second there he was going to turn into a bad cop. Like he finally saw everything that Cromwell was saying, and he was going to be like, yeah. And that, I would have been okay with that too. I would have been like, yes, they Walter White'd it before the Walter White could actually happen. Take that, Vince Gilligan!
Yeah. So, good movie.
It was a wonderful movie.
Yeah, and not only was the writing really good,
mm-hmm.
and I've read the book that it was based on,
okay.
and it was a lot more of a sprawling story and not nearly as tight as this adaptation was. But okay. the character, the acting, I couldn't find a weak spot.
Yeah.
Even the smallest parts all had great acting.
Yeah. Yeah, even the guy from CSI who played Cohen, like, I liked it. Even
that's right.
The 2 seconds on screen.
Who was the guy who got his throat slit?
Oh, Simon Baker.
Yeah, Simon Baker. Before he was famous. Ron Rifkin before he was Arvin Sloan.
Yep. Yeah. I always loved that they put him into, like, DA roles or, you know, Hollywood producer roles.
Nobody snivels like he does.
Nobody. Like, when he was in The Majestic, I was like, of course you'd be, like, a Hollywood producer. Like, that's your look. You have to be, like, a sniveling, backstabbing person because you have that kind of devious, beady eyes.
And I think Danny DeVito stole every scene he was in.
Oh, my favorite scene, hands down, is when they have to convince Simon Baker to go and, like, woo Arvin Sloan to go into bed with him. That was just he's such a sleazeball, but I mean, like, that was just so perfect for him. Just absolutely perfect for him.
Yeah, even up till the end of, or at least the end of his character, he never broke.
No.
he was Mr. Sleazeball till the end.
I like the fact that they put him in the chair. Like, it was good to see him in a role where, I mean, he got killed, but at the same time,
I mean, he was comic relief, but he wasn't.
No.
You know, he was dark.
Very dark. Very, very dark. And especially when you first figure out that he's, you know, working for Prince. No, not Prince.
Patchett.
You know, and, you know, taking photos and things. Like, when that guy leaked, I was like, oh, wow, he is a dirty, like, whatever he can do to make a buck. Which, like, you could go into an entirely different podcast on the whole, you know, like, 1950s and just, especially 1953 Hollywood or 50s mm-hmm. Hollywood where everybody, it wasn't just the act, like, everyone I think equates the 50s Hollywood to the actual film industry and everybody trying to just, you know, get a leg up and, you know, sleeping around and just churning out movies. But it's like the corruption was not just in Hollywood itself, it was actually obviously within the police force, which is what this movie kind of exploits. But at the same time,
well, that was a nice thing that they did is, I mean, it's a fictional movie, but elements of reality,
oh yeah,
throughout it. I mean, Mickey Cohen person, Johnny Stampinato was a real person. The Christmas happened. Like, those are all that they exploited to, you know, create a great story.
Yeah, if we believed in past lives, I think I must have been a mobster in a past life. Because, like, mob stories, like, intrigue the crap out of me. Just because of, and it's all the corruption and just how deep-rooted it can get.
Well, it's interesting that it's a story about, you know, murders and
mm-hmm.
mystery and corruption.
Mm-hmm.
But really, at the root of it, all of it comes back down to, you know, that money and that heroin that got stolen from Mickey Cohen.
Right.
If that, or from his lieutenant. If that doesn't happen, Mickey Cohen doesn't go to jail. None of this movie happens.
So we should go back in time. And then that way,
and save Mickey Cohen. No,
that way, Russell Crowe doesn't have to slap Kim Basinger around.
Oh, yeah, that was unfortunate.
Which I'm convinced now.
But that scene was played really well.
Which is why I think that's where she won her Oscar, was that scene alone. Because
I
kept
saying, I did it, you know, I thought I was helping you.
Right. Because I was looking at the rest of the movie, and I'm like, it's not like she gives a bad performance. She's great. But that scene, I think, right there was where everyone said, no, that was her genuine fact. Like, that scene was played off really well, and there was only, like, 3 lines of dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
And the look he gives when he realizes that he hit her, just like his father hit his mother, like, he wants to just go put himself...
Yeah, just see his, you know, his iron fist just crumble.
And then it's almost, he wants to go put himself into, like, a puddle and, like, not...
Yeah, then he mopes for the next 15 minutes of the movie. Until he goes out charging off to a place where he pretty much knows he's going to die.
Right. And hoping that he's going to get out alive, but...
I don't even know if he was hoping to get out alive.
I think he was hoping...
I think he wanted to punish himself for doing that.
Yeah. And then he gets her at the end, and she forgives him.
Yeah, it was a, some guys get the world, and some guys get a hooker and a trip to Arizona.
Ex-hooker and a trip to Arizona. No, I think that movie is definitely, it needs to have like a resurgency. You know, there are certain movies from, you know, of yore that a lot of people give a lot of credit to.
Oh yeah, it's 15-year anniversary.
Like, you know, if you're listening to this podcast and you're like, man, they really this movie, then you need to watch it.
Or if you saw it before, which is why you're listening now, you know, go back and watch it again and see if you can pick up on those things that you may have missed the first time around or forgotten.
And see why.
And then go tell a friend.
Yeah. Spread, like, pay it forward for show on this thing, because to, especially from, like, I love acting. Like, that's one of my, like, bread and butter things. And so if you want to see good acting in movies, like, Pierce. This is where Guy Pearce really shows that he is amazing. Like, this is pre-Leonard. This is pre, you know, I forget what his last name in the Memento is, but no matter. But this is, like, pre all of that. And you just see that intensity.
And once again, another movie where foreigners, Australians, come in and, you know, blow us away.
Right. Yeah, and just give you just complete dedication to the movie. I mean, they... Guy Pearce, man. Like I said, like, I wanted to punch him, but I mean, just for that, like if I ever saw that man on the street, I want to give him a hug and just be like, I don't know if people tell you this enough, but you were fantastic.
Yeah. The shootout scene when they go after the escaped prisoners, and the guy who's with him gets killed, and it's just down to him, and he running down the hall with the shotgun, and the guy's trying to close the elevator door and just sticks it in there.
And the look on his face when he's like, I can't believe I did that.
Yeah.
And then even he mopes for like 15 minutes where he's just like,
in a movie is a long time
to be moping. Because he's just like, I can't believe that happened. I mean, it's just, like you said, for me, there's few flawless movies, one of them being The Exorcist. This is a flawless movie for me.
Yeah. At this point, I've seen it so many times that I'm trying to find ways to attack it.
Right.
To find a way... I can't.
Just can't do it.
I love the style. I love the visuals. I love the acting, the dialogue, like everything. It's funny.
What was your first time watching it? Did you see it when it first came out, or did you see it?
No, I probably saw it a few years after it came out. Okay. It was on IFC.
Okay.
And I was flipping through the channels, and I turned it on right at the scene when Vincent gets killed. And I was like, I don't even know what this movie is. I've never heard of this. What if I watched it straight through to the... I mean, I missed the whole first half of the movie.
Right.
And it was like, okay, I need to go see... I went and rented and watched the whole thing all over again.
Nice.
Like, it was... Yeah. It hooked me.
Have you ever had a movie hook you as much as this movie does? Or...
One of the few movies I've seen that I watched it and then immediately rewatched it was Kiss Kiss Bang Bang.
Oh, good call.
With Robert Downey Jr. Yeah, and Val Kilmer. I think that movie's hilarious.
I need to see that one.
And it's another one of those detective noir, hard-boiled type stories where there's these two cases are not related and then they are the same case.
He stumbles into the audition room.
They killed him! I killed him!
The look on his face is just like brilliant. They're like, you're hired. He's like, huh? I feel like there's a whole lot that you could go into on tangents, and then but you end up repeating yourself because all you can say are just high praises about the movie.
Mm-hmm.
I think as a first time watching it, it definitely, when I first watch a movie, I'm looking for something that's gonna grab me, that's gonna in some way, like I said, like we said Deep Blue Sea earlier, like. That grabbed me because it was just so just craptastic.
It is so funny.
It's just so funny. And it's unintentionally funny, but it is funny.
Tom Jane is a good action hero in that movie,
though. He is. Well, he's a good action hero, period. Like, I haven't seen The Punisher, but I hear he's...
Did you see the short film version of The Punisher that he made? Yes,
where he goes
The Dirty Laundry?
Yes!
Check that out. If you like The Punisher, or if you like action revenge movies, search up Dirty Laundry on YouTube. And It's good. He
financed the whole thing himself.
Yeah.
That short. And it's literally only like 10 minutes long, maybe.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's just
10 minutes of pure tension.
Oh my God. Like, he's, check it out. It's super awesome. But I mean, people like him, which I think when they first came out, I got him and Guy Pearce confused for a while.
Tom Jane?
Yeah. It's like I used to get Pacino and De Niro confused when I was really young.
Really young.
And then I learned the difference. That they look nothing alike.
Yeah.
Absolutely nothing.
They're just in movies together.
They're just in movies together. Sometimes it's good,
Sometimes it's Righteous Kill. Yeah.
They tried so hard with that one.
That was a bad movie.
Yeah. That should be a whole podcast for you right there.
Bad movie. I don't want to talk about bad movies. Bad movies should not be a thing. I want to talk about things that are a thing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, bad movies should not be a thing. And if that was the case, yeah. then Hollywood,
I hope you're listening. stop making bad movies.
We know that they're profitable. We get it. We understand that you're trying to make a buck. But here's a way you can make a better buck. Make good stuff.
Well, you look at, in 1997, Titanic made $1 billion. And it has, like, an 85% rating on Rotten Tomatoes.
Only 85?
Yeah.
And it won Best Picture?
Yeah.
What?
This movie, 99%.
Which means 98% of the critics that actually submitted something loved this movie.
Yeah.
So... Because, to be honest...
If only Titanic come out 3 weeks later... Then it would have had to be up against Shakespeare in Love in 98 for Best Picture.
Which it would have been.
Which it trumped. Would have been, yeah, not one.
Well, I wonder if it, mentioning that, like, if it had gone into 1998, do you think...
I mean, it still probably would have won just because... Do you think something does that much at the box office, they're going to have to acknowledge it.
Well, yeah, I mean, that movie was also out for, like, 8 months, 10 months in the theaters. I mean...
And that's all into 98.
Yeah.
Because it didn't come out till mid-December 97.
Because so. I remember I used to live by the Century Theaters in Winchester, right? Mm-hmm. And, like, we used to drive by that theater all the time. And I remember for literally 10 months. Like, after 3 months, I was like, oh, they're still showing it. 3 months later, I was like, oh, they're still showing it. And then, like, another 2 months later, I was like, is that movie still playing?
It's still playing, but people are still going to see
it. I know!
And that is not a short movie.
No.
I mean, this is like 2 hours. A little over 2 hours.
Probably 220.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it doesn't feel like it's long.
No, it doesn't.
Because it keeps the paces. Yeah. I mean, I haven't been a huge fan of a lot of Curtis Hanson's other movies. I mean, I like some of them, but he did a really good job on this.
He knew exactly the marks he needed to hit at the right times.
And that was what was so impressive after reading the book, was that it's a long book, and it's not a book that's very, you know, fast move. I mean, yeah, it's not fast moving.
Is the book really, like, procedural heavy? Do they use a lot of...
No, there's just a lot of characters.
Oh, okay.
And so they cut out a lot of the book to kind of hone down on this for the movie.
Oh, okay. Now, are Bud and Ed, are they characters in the book, too?
Jack, Bud, and Exley.
Okay.
They're the three main characters.
Oh, okay. Is James Cromwell really Irish, or is that just a choice?
I think he just does that in movies.
Okay.
So I've seen him in other movies, and he doesn't have the accent. Yeah. I'm pretty sure he's American.
Yeah, that's what I thought, too. And it wasn't even, like, a really big, thick Irish accent, so I was like, are you... For a while there, to be quite honest, I didn't know if he was actually Irish in the... Like, if it was Irish.
Well, I mean, I saw Babe. I know what he's talking about.
Babe is rooted in reality.
No, I love when they do that, when casting directors do that in movies, where they take someone who's been this nice character and then put him in this dark role.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, it's the farmer from Babe, and then he shoots him in the chest, or with a Drive, when it's, oh it's Nemo's dad from Finding Nemo. And oh, he just slit that guy's wrist. Stabbed that guy in the face with a fork.
Can you imagine, like, parents taking their kids to see, like, when they're older, of course.
Oh, it's an Albert Brooks movie. It's Nemo's dad.
He was the fish in the last one. It's going to be just fine. Not to mention, before you even get to the part where he slits the guy's wrist, you have to endure Ryan Gosling, like, stomping a guy's face in for literally 10 minutes.
Yeah.
And then there's, like, this massive slow-mo where he looks back at the girl like, yeah, this is what I do. And she's like, what the fuck just happened? Sorry, are you like, do you guys? Yeah. Okay. Right. Some people do, some people don't.
We mark the explicit tag. We don't use it very often. But,
oh.
Yeah, so.
Yeah, it, I think to sum up.
LA Confidential should be a thing.
I am glad to think, too. And I'm glad Brendan forced me to watch it.
Because, but don't feel like you need to be forced to watch it.
No. He made me watch it because it was literally sitting on my shelf in its copy for 3 years. And now I'm able to have watched it. I now am going to own it so I can watch it again at any point that I want.
And now I can get my copy back.
Yes. I really only bought the Blu-ray because I wanted to see all the special features. Because now I'm really just wanting to just dive into the special features and just see what like gems they may have.
Yeah.
I hope. So if anybody, like, well, like, because certain movies are like, this has got crazy special features, and it's like, look at this one commentary track by the associate producer's assistant. It's like,
oh.
But their title was longer than their name, so we can't actually give you their name.
Well, I'm glad I was able to, you know, watch this movie with you.
Thank you,
sir. Glad to have you on the podcast, sir.
Absolutely. Thank you for the invite. I appreciate
and we hope to have you back sometime in the future for another topic, which we will reveal later. I've been working on. So until Alan back from Europe, hope he's having a good time. He should be recording his version of the podcast as we speak. So
Alan,
until next time.
Alan, your chair is warm for you. It's ready.